Previously on Under Our Feet. We learned about the history and science of PFAS, PFAS, and the dangers of these forever chemicals. We learned about how they leak out into the environment, and once they're out there, how they spread around through the groundwater system. This time, we're going beyond the science of all that to hear firsthand what it's like to live with acute contamination.
PFOS.
PFOA.
PFMOPRA.
PFMOBA.
PFHPA.
ADONA.
PFDONA.
PFECA.
FDS622.
PFHPS.
PFDA.
TREA.
PFNA.
PFNA.
PFPES.
PFTRIADS.
PFHXA.
PFHXS.
Welcome to Under Our Feet, the podcast where we go deep into the earth and deep into time to learn about the geologic forces and events that shape the world around us. I'm your host, Rudy Molinick, and this is Season 2, all about PFAS and groundwater. If you want to support the show, there's a link to subscribe on Patreon at our website, uofpod.org. That's uofpod.org. So, in what you're about to hear, you won't hear me. These are the stories of folks living in the Peshtigo and Marinette areas, at the mouth of the Menominee River on the shore of Lake Michigan's Green Bay. This is just a snapshot of a few of the lives up there that have been consumed by PFAS for more than 5 or 6 years now. There are necessarily people and stories that I've missed to capture all of this in just a short podcast episode. There have also been a lot of legal and political developments that happened since I conducted these interviews, but my goal here isn't necessarily to keep you up to date on the latest news. Rather, I hope to give you a feeling for what it's been like for these folks living with acute PFAS contamination. I also want to note that you should definitely stick around until the end of this episode. In about 26 minutes, after we hear from people that live in Peshtigo and Marinette today, there's another segment with stories from the Menominee Nation, who have lived in Northeast Wisconsin since time immemorial. And as we get started, I want you to know that the first voice that you'll hear on the phone is Cindy Boyle, who, when I talked to her about a year ago, was the town chairperson of Peshtigo. The rest of the folks will then introduce themselves and tell their stories.
Hello, this is Cindy.
My name is Kayla Furton, and I have gotten very involved in clean water advocacy by nature of our community's contamination, and am now also on the local Town of Peshtigo Board of Supervisors, kind of as an extension of that clean water activism.
My name is Doug Oitzinger. I am a retired person, and I'm currently a city alderman. And I was elected to the city council in 2020, largely because I came out of retirement, largely because of the PFAS issue affecting my community.
Yeah, my name is Jeff Lamont. I was actually born and raised here just over the city of Marinette line in the town of Peshtigo. And in 1985, I did a water resource engineering degree, mostly focused on hydrology, hydrogeology.
It was an enormous blessing to have somebody with his experience and scientific knowledge and know-how on the front lines with us tackling this.
I wish I could show you the view, but I'm sitting at my kitchen table and I'm about 70 yards from Green Bay.
I actually grew up in the town of Peshtigo. My parents bought the property actually that we own and are raising our kids right now when I was about 2 years old, I think. We live right on the Bay of Green Bay, which was really, you know, a magical place to grow up, having such easy access to natural beauty, and always loved the community too. The very Northeast Wisconsin. Everyone is your neighbor and willing to help, and, you know, not to paint it too rosy, but it really was a special place to grow up.
Well, my husband grew up here and I grew up out in the county. So we have a lot of of roots and connections, familial and friendship based, lots of support systems. That's the emotional part. Well, you know, the way it actually happened with us was really unique. It was around November 2017, because I remember it was before Thanksgiving and a bunch of his family was coming together. And I don't know if it was the water utility or something within the city limits was trying to gain access to test the water at that home. And my husband, being local, was the point of contact and was like, well, why do you want to test it? What are you testing it for? They didn't want to reveal it. And he said, well, you're not going to test it unless you're going to give me the information I'm asking for and the results. So that's how we ended up catching wind to these concerns.
Yeah, what actually happened in November of 2017, a bunch of neighbors in the town of Peshtigo that abuts the city of Marinette got this letter saying, we believe from Tyco Johnson Controls. We believe we've had contamination leave our site via groundwater, and we'd like if we could come and sample your wells. And at the time, I had, you know, dozens of neighbors call me because they knew me and my background. I grew up here, and they said, geez, Jeff, what do we do? You know, what should I do? And I said, let them sample your well.
Well, there is the Fire Technology Center, the Fire Training Center, that has had a variety of names, actually, since I was growing up. It was Ansel, and then Tyco, and Johnson Controls bought it, and which is why now we just refer to it as Tyco Johnson Controls.
You know, because they're a large employer, you have a lot of not only active employees who work at the facilities, but you also have a lot of retirees and their spouses. Sometimes you have several generations in a family that have gone to work for the company.
We find out that the fire training center that had been in existence here for about 65 years. And it's a international fire training center. So they would fly people in from airports all over the world, a lot of different DOD, you know, the Navy, the Air Force, you know, whoever flew planes. And they would train them on this 320-acre facility, which is about as the crow flies, maybe 3/4 of a mile up gradient of us. And what they would do is they would ignite thousands of gallons of accelerant, and these people that were training would have to put it out with the AFFF bombs. And of course, once they extinguished it and the training exercise was over, they'd come out with big fire hoses and wash all the foam down in the streams and the creeks that run through the property. So this training was done on just open ground, no containment whatsoever.
My wife and I decided to join a community garden by a local church just a few blocks from our house. And they were having an organizing meeting in the spring. And this is 2018. And as we walked into the church, I noticed right next to the community garden was a little pump, a Sandpoint well pump, which obviously they had been using to water their garden. As the meeting was continuing, I said, by the way, I don't think you should be using that pump to water the garden because of the contamination from Johnson Controls or Tyco. And everyone in the room said, what contamination? Now, this had been being reported in the newspaper since late 2017 that this thing called PFAS had contaminated groundwater in the town of Peshtigo. Town of Peshtigo is roughly a block and a half from my house, and a block and a half from that, or two blocks from that community garden. It was clear to me right then and there, my community did not know PFAS had an impact on us. So I think there was generally a sense of, oh, Tyco is, they're addressing this, you know. They're going to do the right thing. And it just was not top of mind in 2018. Let's just say we felt we were protected. The other thing is that having been mayor, I came into this with the attitude that Well, Tyco, they're a pretty good corporate citizen in the community. They're always donating things. You know, you could not go to a fundraiser without getting an Ansel fire extinguisher. I felt, well, they're good corporate citizen, and they just didn't know. All right, that was my impression. They didn't know, and then they stumbled upon this, and now they're trying to do the right thing. You asked me that question today, I would say they knew. They are not trying to do the right thing.
They had been open ground testing with a FFF firefighting foam, which contains PFAS, for decades. And open ground testing was widely considered not to be safe even by industry standards. So the fact that they had been doing that for decades is appalling, because of course there was going to be a resulting massive plume of groundwater contamination.
But then it came out, yes, they discovered in the fall of 2013 that they had PFAS contamination on their site at the Fire Technology Center. They retested 6 months later in early 2014, same results came back, and they told no one. They didn't tell the public, they didn't tell the DNR, they told no one. And so I look at this as, you found this in 2013, you didn't tell the DNR to 2016, you didn't start testing these private properties until 2017. That's 4 years of people drinking this stuff in the town of Peshtigo. That's immoral. And Tyco's response is, well, we didn't think it had left our property.
And I just think how convenient. We said, wait a second, if there is contamination there, there has to be potential contamination here. Because, and again, I am no scientist, but groundwater doesn't stop just because there's a road or a ditch. And I also think of the fact that if I put anything in, near, around a neighbor's well, like, there is no way, A, no way I would ever do that. B, there's no way I could legally claim, oh, I didn't know it would go in the well. Oh, it's only a little bit dangerous.
But over the course of the next 2 years through their investigation, they found that this plume goes from the Menominee River 6 miles south. So we've got this plume that's discharging PFAS at 2,000-3,000 parts per trillion 24/7 across a 6 mile wide plume that's discharging directly into Green Bay.
We got our letter. It was a Friday, as often there, overnight FedEx letters come. It hit me. Like, we had obviously cared, we were concerned. But once I got that letter, it was like a ton of bricks of, no, you need to take action now. Spent that weekend calling absolutely anyone who would listen to me about PFAS. And actually, it was some water activist out in Vermont that said, hey, have you talked to Ruth Kowalski? And I kind of knew Ruth because she was a teacher in the local school district, connected with her, and she invited me to what was called at the time Concerned Friends and Neighbors.
There has been a core group, Jeff is one of them, who have been instrumental in organizing neighbors.
So we formed a small group called, I formed it in early 2018, Concerned Friends and Neighbors, which then morphed into SOH2O.
The acronym is Save Our Water.
I left the meeting feeling like, okay, there's hope. Here are all of these individuals. Here are these community members committed to working for clean water for our community. And Chuck was there, Chuck Boyle and Jeff Lamont and Doug Oisinger and Cindy Boyle and I remember I went up after the meeting and I'm like, how can I help? Like, sign me up, put me in, coach. Like,
so we started immediately. We petitioned the DNR to set standards for PFAS in March of 2018. And so since then, we've been advocating both on the state level and the federal level.
And now several of us are in elected offices locally, fighting still for safe water.
I think one of the biggest ways it has impacted our daily life is just like the amount of time and energy that has shifted to dedicate to like the activism, so to speak. I am so continually thankful for that kind of core group, Doug and Chuck and Jeff and Cindy and, you know, countless other residents that have just continually been there. But I also see the fatigue. I've also seen that every single action and step of accountability has only been through great effort of citizen action. There's not going to be some magic water genie who's going to come and fix it for us. You know, we are going to have to literally fight for it.
This is tremendously draining and at times depressing when you get a bill all the way through the legislature and you think, man, we're finally going to do something here and they won't even let it come up for a vote. It's tough to do this. And these folks have been fantastic working on this, but they've given up a lot of their private lives to do this.
You can't. I mean, today I'm just exhausted because we've had, God, fall day yesterday, 9 hours of it yesterday, and this morning since 6:30, it's been nothing but water. So I'm a little exhausted, but that's not unusual. It's all consuming.
But I would just say that I've watched the effect of this on my friends, like Cindy and Chuck Boyle and Kayla Furton and Jeff Lamont, they're living in the town of Peshtigo, and they have contaminated wells. And this is tough.
So, yeah, for the past 4.5 years, my wife and I have been on bottled water for drinking and cooking. And every time I pick up one of those, I'm going to be 66 in January. Every time I pick up one of those 40 pound, 5 gallon jugs of water, I go, God darn it, how long do I have to do this?
It is very difficult to fight a multinational corporation. And we're just citizens. We're just individual citizens.
For me and for my husband, you just find yourself with no options other than to fight for permanent safe water. And we're, like I said, I mean, November will be 5 years. And we have done everything that we can think of to do. For me personally, it was evident that I had done everything that was possible from the outside. So then I kind of was like, well, I have to either shut up or put up. And I ran for town chair, which is never something I'd wanted to do.
Well, I gave up being retired and I got back into politics. I ran for city council because I didn't feel our city was doing enough.
And it gives such hope that, okay, if we are all doing the little bit that we can where we're at together, we really can. You know, and if I didn't believe this, I would give up. But, you know, we really can make a difference.
And while we do have a path forward for that, which I'm grateful for, it is so painfully slow. Because every single inch is a fight. Every single inch is a fight. The good news is we are still making forward progress. You know, it's been a fight from day one. And that is just no exaggeration. I remember saying to my husband when it happened, and it was kind of tongue in cheek, I didn't actually believe it. Now I believe it. I said, my God, this is going to be like a 20-year fight. And genuinely, I think I just said it casually. And now 5 years in, knowing how hard we've had to fight, and we still don't have permanent safe water for our community. I pray to God it's not another 15 years.
Tyco has said again and again they're not leaving, and that this is their community and they're here to stay. You can take them at their word or not. I've come to find that their word is not very good.
You know, the politics here and the game playing has just been horrendous. And, you know, Johnson Controls is a, what are they now, $30 billion a year firm or something to that effect? I mean, so it's been very, very frustrating, and they obviously don't care about us. I mean, they're willing to pull all this contamination down by giving everybody a deep well into the next aquifer, you know, and all the top of the bedrock here is highly fractured. So it's just not a viable alternative in my mind. But people don't want to wait. You know, it's 5 years they think is too long. Well, I've worked on sites for 20 and 30 years before the final remedy was implemented. The first two interim actions they put in place were when they found out some of the concentrations in particularly two of the streams going into Green Bay.
Tyco invested a great deal of money to build a groundwater extraction and treatment system. The acronym is GETS, G-E-T-S, groundwater extraction and treatment system. And basically what it does is it goes to the worst of the worst contamination spot, which is two blocks from my house, and it sets up wells, and it tries to remove the PFAS out of that groundwater, and then pump the clean groundwater back into a drainage ditch.
So what they're doing is they're essentially just trying to block the plume from migrating. So we'll see how effective this is. What they say is in over 50 years, it'll collect 90% of the mass of the plume.
My answer is liar, liar, pants on fire. No, you won't.
There are steps and filtration measures that the DNR is requiring Tyco JCI to take now, but it will not get any of it back. It will not clean up what is there now.
Picture a plastic glass that's got this wonderful milkshake in it, and you got a straw in your glass to drink your milkshake, but the glass has a crack and that milkshake spreads out on the counter before you notice that crack is there. And so it's just gone all over the counter where you grab that straw and you suck up that milkshake as fast as you can to try to keep it from spreading. And maybe if you drank really fast, you've gotten all of it out of that glass. You haven't gotten any of it off the counter, and you never will by having a straw in that glass.
And so after 50 years, they still have concentrations in the tens of thousands of parts per trillion, leaving that area and the site and the plume.
I told Tyco this. I said, you know, directly across from where you're building this is a cemetery. And I said, you know where I'm going to be in 30 years? I'm going to be in that cemetery, and I'm going to come back and haunt you, because PFAS will still be underneath this cemetery at high concentrations after I'm dead. I liken this to peeling an onion. PFAS is like peeling an onion. You peel an onion, you take one layer off, there's another layer underneath. There's another layer of onion underneath. And the more you peel, the more your eyes water, because it just becomes so depressing and overwhelming to be fighting this problem only to find out it's ever bigger.
You know, we don't even know the tip of the iceberg.
Well, Rudy, PFAS will not be behind us. There's no one alive today living in the Marinette and Peshtigo area. No one, not from the youngest child, who will live long enough to see PFAS disappear from the groundwater and the bay. When you label something a forever chemical, that tells you something. It's a forever problem.
I just feel really that it's such a gross injustice. You know, the industry knowingly open ground tested this stuff for decades while warning their customers upon selling it not to test with it on open ground. And so you just have to keep fighting, because until we all have permanent safe drinking water, nobody's health is safe and nobody's property value is restored.
PFAS is 100% man-made. It does not exist on this planet as a natural compound. It has gotten into the environment because man made it, man used it, and man was careless with it. And to argue that it's too costly to clean up, or too costly to regulate, or too costly, it's like, tell that to the young man who got testicular cancer in our community. And so did four or five of his fellow graduates from Marinette High School in the same class. That is unheard of occurrence of testicular cancer. That doesn't happen in a small population like ours. Tell that to all of my friends who've had their thyroid removed. Tell that to children who have learning disabilities, or children who have immune issues. In this day of viruses, that your immune system doesn't work as well as it could because as a child you were drinking PFAS. And I think we have to come to understand that there's a compact between businesses, the economic system, and the people who live and work in that system. You can't use us as an expendable resource. You can't cause us harm and not be responsible for helping fix that. You have to be held responsible. And I get emotional about this, but as an individual, I'm responsible for my actions. Corporations have to be responsible for their actions as well.
You know, I think it's important that the public does really, really know, appreciate, respect the ground beneath their feet, and, you know, recognize that industry has got to start showing more respect for that ground beneath the public's feet and stop using it as their dumping grounds, because it cannot repeatedly be taken for granted.
Now, we'll head about 60 miles east to the Menominee Nation and hear how PFAS contamination has impacted the tribe and the very site of their origin, the mouth of the Menominee River. Again, you won't be hearing me during this segment, but while the story is being told, you will be hearing music from Wade Fernandez, an award-winning Menominee artist who I'm grateful to have be part of this episode. If you want to hear more from Wade, you can go to his website, wadefernandezmusic.com. There's also a link in the show notes.
Also, on a quit natakam, Wapasha Nitotam, Kashina Init Skiwakian. My English name is Guy Ryder, and I work for an organization called Minneconican, located here on the Menominee Indian Reservation.
My name is David Guino. I'm the Menominee name is Nauqua. Means the sun is at mid-sky. I'm from the Menominee Wolf Clan. My work, I'm the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Menominee Tribe and Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act designee for the tribe. and also the director of the Menominee Cultural and Logging Museums. Well, the relationship to the Menominee River and Menominee people goes back thousands of years, time immemorial.
You know, even just a couple of generations of a family homestead, and they have that deep love for it. Imagine living there for 10,000, you know, 30,000 years, and the love that you would have for that place. So, you know, the Menominee River is still full of our antiquity as a nation. There's still places that are visible there that you know, hold burial mounds of our people, prehistoric garden beds that you can still visibly see with your eye. It's pretty pristine in some spots. There are, of course, homes, and as you get closer to the mouth of that river where our people, our oral history states that we come from, you know, is the city of Marinette and the city of Menominee, Michigan.
It's there, you know, the Menominee still go over there because we believe it's this is their birthplace, even though it's concrete mostly and industry and whatever. It's a place that it's like what Jerusalem is to the Christians. This is the mouth of Menominee and river is to the Menominee. We, through the treaties, we were forced to move from the Menominee River to where we are today, 60 miles west on the Menominee Reservation. But we still go back to the Menominee River for gatherings, for ceremonies. What it means to us is it's the life of our people. That's where we came from. Every time I go over there, there's a special feeling that, especially at the mouth, that something did happen there. There's a big feeling that this is where it all started for us, and this is a sacred place.
You know, our creation story is about, you know, I bet you it would take a good couple days to go through it all. You know, it's really a long story, and I know we don't got that kind of time. And, you know, it's one thing to kind of like summarize it, where you get a bit of an idea of it, but you really miss out on if you don't know the language and you hear it the original way, because it's alive. You know, in the oral history, it states that our first Menominee came out of the earth there, and it was in the shape of a bear. You know, as it came out of the earth, it was turned into a man.
The creator saw him and then transformed him into human form, and he was the first Menominee.
After it kind of was walking around, it seen that a bird flying high up in the sky, and called to it, asked it to come down, and it was actually the eagle.
Brother Eagle, come down, be my brother. Walk with me. Eagle descended. She was too transformed.
When it came on and touched the ground, it too turned into a man. And those were the very first two clan members of the Menominee Nation. And as they walked further, they seen this brown figure, you know, swimming in that water there. And it was very curious to see these two men walking up this river. And it came out of the water, and it came out, and it was the very first Menominee woman. It was a beaver that got turned into the very first Menominee woman. And
as the two walked up the Menominee River, they encountered a moose, wolf, and crane. Those two were transformed to human form.
And then as they walked further up that river, other animals joined them and formed the five principal clans of our people, which is the bear, eagle, moose, wolf, and crane clans.
As the creation story goes, there was two special gifts the creator gave us, the wild rice, or manomen, and the maple trees to gather sap to make sugar and syrup, so that we would always have those. And you do have those today. And the Menominees for thousands of years live closely with the environment.
You know, so that was like the very beginning of our community. Of course, that story, like I said, is a big, long story. You could look it up too online. I mean, they'll give you a little bit more of a version of it. But, you know, you'd really have to like come and spend some time with us and really truly hear that story. You know, I remember talking to an uncle of mine, and he had just basically told me that, you know, at one time he said that that bear, that first Menominee, that bear, walked up that river and stood up for us. And now we need to walk up that river and stand up for it. You know, for us as Menominee that been through, just like almost every other tribe, just like every other tribe here in America, that's been through, you know, genocide, basically, you know, and we're lucky enough to be, you know, 60 miles or so by the crow flies or whatever they say, from the place of our origin. You know, not a lot of tribes have that. We are in our ancestral homeland where our current reservation is. And, you know, there's just tons of oral history that's connected with that river. There's tons of spirits that live within, reside in that river, around that river. I mean, you know, you spend, you know, 10,000 plus years next to, in a certain spot, you know, you're bound to understand your area and have this reverence for this place. So, you know, it's for us, it's almost sometimes, or at least for me anyway, it seems like if only the Catholics knew where the Garden of Eden was, and if they could actually visit that place and put their feet in that place, the feeling they would get, right? That's how it feels like for me when I'm up there, because to me, that, you know, really, that's what it is, you know, and there's so much history there and there's so much connection there. It's almost unexplainable at times, you know, it really is. And it's an amazing place. And, you know, the river and all the ecosystem that it is incredible. You know, the paper companies and all those industrial companies along the Menominee River, it polluted that, you know, river so badly, you know, that it was one of the most polluted waterways in the country at one time. You know, I was very, very much involved with the communities up there when they first found it, the PFAS, you know, from that first fire extinguisher business or whatever that was, and, you know, the wells being polluted in Peshtigo, you know, I was paying attention to that time.
You know, I said that they're the forever chemical and it's going to be in a river for forever. I don't know. It's a hard question. Forever. I doubt that Menominees will not quit going over there because of that. To a lot of Menominees, it's still sacred to us. I mean, we didn't put those chemicals there. The Menominee people that do it. And to us, it's a place that is still sacred to us because it's our birthplace.
One of the most, like, biggest moments in my life was, I guess it was I was naive about, you know, environmental laws when I first started getting involved. But I thought, like, you know, like, we got the Clean Water Act, right? Like, it says clean water in it. Like, this thing will defend us. This thing will take care of us. And then I read it and I was like, oh my God, why do they even call it this? You know, it isn't designed to protect us. It isn't designed to stop any of these things. All these environmental laws, you know, are designed to allow these companies to do exactly what they've done, what they're doing. Before I was getting on this call, I was just doing some research of like PFAS and trying to get an understanding, a little bit deeper understanding of what I had. And I came across like the EPA's website on PFAS. And I thought, like, shit, I ain't gonna, oh, excuse my language. Shoot, I ain't gonna, you know, go on there. You know, they're probably gonna lie to me, you know, and tell me what they want to hear. And I was like, I better find a different source to get my information. And it was just like Like, these are the people that should be have the absolute facts and the reality of it, but you know they don't. Who do you trust? Who do you talk to? You know? Who's the one that's gonna, you know, tell you the truth, right? And not just, you know, put pretty language out there. They say it all the time, right? Water is life. Water, we all need it. And water plays a major role in everything we are as people, from not only just we've lived around it, you know, and needed it to survive, but throughout our culture, throughout our spirituality, there's countless and countless stories of our connection with water. And it's almost overwhelming for me to think about it. I remember somebody had sent me a quote one time, and it was just in passing kind of a thing. And I remember it said something like, if you're going to build a boat, don't assign tasks, don't go cut wood or tell people to go cut wood and get all these materials. Have them yearn for the sea. And I thought, man, you know, that's what I want to do, right? Like, that's my strategy. I don't want to tell you what to do. I don't want to, you know, do any of that. I want you to love the earth so much, you know, that you're gonna do what it is you feel you need to do. And whatever it is your role is, you know, I can't tell you that. You know, you gotta search within yourself, you know, and find it and define it for yourself. I think if you are deeply in yourself, you know, connected, and you'll see there's a path there, you know. And I just hope people find it. I hope we find it before it's too late. Because truly, you know, it's one canoe, right? And we're all in it.
I want to have the river, the mouth of the river in its entirety to be recognized as Menominee, not only as a name of the river, but as a place where people lived for thousands of years, time immemorial. And the only way to do that is to tell people about it. And we've been working with the city of Marinette, different groups, to try to make people aware that there's still a people that are neighbors 60 miles away that are from Menominee River. And that's how we want to recognize the Menominee River forever, as the way it is. I mean, it could have all these things done to it and whatever else, it's still the Menominee River. Still the place that we were born, and that's the way it's going to stay.
If anything, you know, anybody that hears this or anybody that views this, whatever it is, that, you know, they could just every day commit to honoring the water, whether it's just something as small as when you're brushing your teeth or you're washing your face, that you thank that water for being there and doing what it's always done, you know. And it just takes small things like that, right, to really change. And you start to see that water is not as just a resource or something you can use, but as a relative, as something absolutely essential to my very existence, and also that I am water. I am water.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to Cindy, Jeff, Doug, Kaylee, Anaquette, and Nawakwa for sharing their time and stories. Next time on Under Our Feet, we look forward to what can and is being done about PFAS, and also the bigger question, how should we as a society choose to regulate and relate to things like PFAS that are at once incredibly useful and devastatingly harmful? The music you heard in the first part of today's episode, and that you're hearing now, is from the Blue Dot Sessions. In the second part of the story with the Menominee Storytellers was music from Wade Fernandez. Find more of his work at wadefernandezmusic.com. There's also a link in the show notes. There's more about the podcast and a link to support the show on Patreon at our website, uofpod.org. Under Our Feet is a production of Meandering Media. See you next time.